Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to the International Black Summit talk show.
Hi, this is Glenn Gwinnett. Hi, this is Glenn Gwinnett. Sorry, I had a little technical blip there. This is the Man of the Month. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We've got several shows, but tonight's show is one of four shows that come on Sunday night at 8 p.m. The first Sunday of the month, we have On Track with Henrietta Byrd. The second Sunday of the month is Let's Celebrate with Shakaysha Showers from Compton. And the third show is Vision Works with Clara Lyons Devon, and she's coming out of Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And the fourth Sunday is Man of the Month, Glenn Greenwich, featuring a man from the International Black Summit that is up to interesting and challenging things. What we're going to do right now, who we have tonight is Mr. Preston King out of New York and City Works. But before we go to him, I'm going to read the Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. All over the world. What's today's date? May 24th, 2008. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. Just want to let you know that Shakaysha is manning the chat room and the switchboard. So that's Shakaysha, who is one of the hosts on the Sunday show. I failed to mention that there's also a show on the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday called The Wealth Club, and that's about financial intelligence and investment opportunities. So it's a forum to discuss and to explore investment opportunities. All right, so let's bring to you live Mr. Preston King out of New York City. He's a CPA. He has a run in Harlem. He's got a lot of little projects that are impacting the city. And I wanted to bring him live to you, Mr. Preston King.
Yes, Glenn. Happy to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for taking time out of your holiday weekend to spend some time with us. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So let's get started. So let's start out with City Works. So give us some history on how City Works came to being, and some of the things that they've done, and the organizations that are underneath it. So let's start there.
Yeah, okay, I'd be happy to. City Works is an organization whose purpose is to bring diverse people together harmoniously and to create a city that works for everyone. Functionally, the way city works is operating today is that one of the most important mechanisms that we provide for our constituencies and members is that we make the 501c3 IRS legal umbrella available to organizations, individuals, and entities who are trying to make a difference, primarily in the city of New York, but also throughout the world. CityWorks was founded and actually was an outgrowth of the Landmark Education, and at that time it was called the EST Organization in 1980. The founder of New York CityWorks was a gentleman who was at that time a participant in the EST Organization. His name was Conrad Eberstein. He's an attorney out of University of Pennsylvania. And he and a group of gentlemen who were inspired by, at that time, primarily Robert Kennedy and the dream of the Kennedys and the Kennedy family, started an organization at that time whose purpose and focus was to highlight the aspects of the city that were positive as opposed to their perception that there was so much negative news and negative experiences happening in the city. So the primary focus at that time was to focus on positive news. And they went about trying to make a difference in small ways. And one of the first things that CityWorks did at that time was to have a positive impact in terms of the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which was just about to go out of existence. St. Patrick's Day Parade, as many people know, has an experience of a large number of people who consume alcoholic beverages and feel that the way that they could celebrate St. Patrick's is to make a lot of more noise and break things and have a lot of problems and trouble and fun. But the parade was creating so many problems in the city that they were about to shut it down. And one of the things that came about was, as a result of Conrad observing what was happening, is that the four major elements of the operating control elements of the city were not working together well. That was meaning the fire department, the police department, sanitation department, and the St. Patrick's Day Committee. There just wasn't a lot of coordination. So Conrad, who had some experience operating experience with most of those groups, was able to pull them together and have them talk about their differences. And they actually worked it out so that the St. Patrick's Day Parade continued on. CityWorks, as a result, received a lot of notoriety.
Hold on, Preston. I want people to really get what you just said. So what you just said was because of the work of CityWorks, you guys were able to put back on the books the St. Patty's Day Parade for New York City.
That's right.
Brother, kudos, major kudos.
Wonderful, thank you. Mayor Dinkins at that time, I think, was very prominent. If he was not the mayor, he was very prominent. All of the politicians at that time recognized the work that CityWorks was done. It was written up on the first page of the New York Times, and there was a lot of energy, a lot of spirit, you know, around that time. Through CityWorks. So CityWorks evolved. It went through a few phases. It was about to. It was going through a transition. The inspiration that had carried it to a certain point was becoming altered, and it was a time for change in leadership. And I was selected at that time to be the chairman to carry the organization in some new way. We didn't know what that was, but I had some sense as to what I thought I could see happening in small ways, you know.
So what year was that?
So you know, Comrade and I, we were very good friends. We had some conversations about the mission. I felt that we needed to take a look at something called creating a world that works for everyone, that it wasn't just enough to talk about positive things. And my perception was that the city was not working for a lot of people. And I picked up actually something from Werner Erhard's communication. You know, we want to create a world that works for everyone, acknowledging that there was some things that were missing. And so and as I became more active, involved in the organization, what happened was that City Work, which was primarily a white organization up to that point, and the board members were white, and their constituencies were primarily white. I was involved, and there were a few brothers, but once I became chairman, then we started to have actually a more diverse organization, and it's been that way up until today. And as you know, when you attend the meetings, you see a diversity of people, and that was always my vision, that we could come together as one, and it's been working that way. And we have now, as I've kind of intimated in the past, we have now about 45 organizations under our umbrella, utilizing the 501c3 legal umbrella, UpCity Works. And that's been obviously a popular mechanism, because a lot of people do want to make a difference, but they don't have all of the tools. You know, and if you know anything about human technology, you know that no one person has the answer by himself. You know that we're designed by the function of our creators to have to work together, you know, as brothers. So we've done that to some degree, and we found that by providing accounting and legal services and technologies, communication services and marketing and different diverse contributions of loving people, and the concept of love is a very important aspect in City Works. That's one of the things that the people who really understand come and see what we're doing. The thing that the glue that makes it happen is that we, you know, we intend to make them know that we love them and that we want to listen to them. Now, listening is another very important distinction, and that is when a person has an idea, so many people have great ideas, what helps then to start to make a difference between them, transitioning it from an idea to an operational entity that becomes real and manifested in the world is that, you know, firstly, we find that people need to be listened to, and just the listening in and of itself creates some magical energy in the environment that allows a person to be experiencing himself, that he's real now, rather than being in his living room and having a dream. Now he's speaking to people who listen to him powerfully and love him, and that tends to often times bring something forward that was not there before.
So Preston, there's a couple things here. So not only are you providing the 501c3 umbrella, but you're also providing camaraderie, support, mentoring, shared resources. So there's a lot of other things that you're also providing in addition to the legal standpoint of the umbrella conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So some people call that networking, you know. And I only got to hear Reginald Lewis one time, and Reginald Lewis was probably one of the most successful black business entrepreneurs in the last 25 years, and you know, maybe in the last century. But the one thing that I did take away when I listened to Reginald Lewis is that he said the most important thing that people who are in business can learn, and that is the distinction, the concept of networking. He said it's so critically important. And that stuck with me, and I felt that that I had some sense inside of me that networking was something that I was comfortable with. I love people, and so we carried that forward, and I think it's made a difference, so we're very happy that we're able to provide that. And so we actually have now a number of very powerful projects that we're associated with or have created, and one of my favorites is the Harlem Renaissance Road Race, which is a 5-mile race, which takes place the third Saturday in September. It's been going on for the last 10 years. I was one of the co-founders along with Dr. Roscoe Brown and Abdul Elliman, and that was called the Harlem Renaissance 5-Mile Classic. In the last 2 years, we've changed direction, and the managers have shifted a little bit, and we are now described as the Harlem Renaissance Road Race, and it starts at Harlem YMCA on 135th Street, Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard. It runs up to 145th Street, does a U-turn, goes back into Central Park, and comes back up to 135th Street, completion to Harlem YMCA. It's a great project. A number of organizations: Salem Church, United Methodist Church, New York City Works, St. Nicholas Houses Residents Association, and Harlem YMCA have joined forces. But it's a community race that that brings a lot of spirit to the community. We've had continual support from Senator Bill Perkins from its origins, and the last couple of years we've had Councilwoman Inez Dickens, and one of the other councilmen, Robert Jackson, is like Senator Perkins, has run that race every year.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. They run, and they support the race financially and politically in any way that they can, because it's just something that they feel is one of their favorite events. And Inez, who is not a runner, was urged by Senator Perkins to come last year, and this is now one of her events, and she has stepped forward and indicated that she'd like to fund us as well, and I've heard from their inner people that we're one of their favorite events, so we're proud of that. Also, City Works has another event called Yoga for Peace. It came out of Landmark and some of my interactions with the TMLP, which is Team Management Leadership Program. I did TMLP 1 and 2, and we have a gentleman named Michael Spitzer, who now heads up Yoga for Peace. The organization was created by Jacqueline Stolte, who's now in California. Both of them were my co-teammates in TMLP, and Michael's done a phenomenal job from 7 years ago, where he started that event in Battery Park and in New York City, down the historical aspect in front of the Statue of Liberty, where it was just one event in one city. Now, 7 years later, it's now operating in 28 cities around the country and around the world. And Michael now has in place a structure to expand that 28 cities around the world to 200 cities around the world through his interaction with the United Nations. And it's a phenomenal, phenomenal event. He allows me to, you know, he really blesses me and allows me to speak as being one of the creative forces in having that concept work. And he has just a beautiful group of musicians and Buddhic speakers, and it's a very spiritual event, but it's obviously very physical. From my understanding, they do 180 sun salutations. That's supposed to be very strenuous, but also very spiritual. But we have a number of organizations: Harlem Jazz Foundation, and it just goes on and on. Numbers of organizations who associate with us. We now have also an organization in Hawaii. It's opened up under the umbrella of City Works, and we're very proud of the work that's being done out there through very powerful young lady, Marilyn. Last name will come to me, and our very own Fran McGee, who was a former City Works president as well for about 6 or 7 years. So the work continues to bloom, and the magic of bringing networking and support and listening and distinctions that we picked up in Landmark to empower those people who want to make a difference, it seems to really be something that is relevant. So
that's great. You talk about a couple things. I just want you to mention the Sugar Ray Robinson tribute. Let folks know about that.
Yeah. I was glad that you mentioned that. There's so many things out there, but we are very happy to have an affiliation with and a project under our organization, a 501c3 organizational umbrella, with the Sugar Ray Robinson Legacy Project. And that's headed up by Mr. King. His last name is King, Franklin King, and also partnered with Sugar Ray Robinson Jr., who's also he comes out of the Landmark educational program. And we have just recently, within the last 2 months, have done a very nice collaborative event at Windows Over Harlem. It was well attended. Well over 180 people attended that event, and it really did highlight the accomplishments of the father, Sugar Ray Robinson, and connected with Sugar Ray Jr.'s vision, one world, one people, one brother in common. But there are a lot of initiatives that will be taking place in the future under the Sugar Ray Robinson Legacy Project. One of the things that's going to be focused on this year again will be the naming of the street at 124th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard. It will be officially named Sugar Ray Robinson Place.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. And obviously the mayor and all of the politicians in Harlem are involved with that. And so that will be something that will be putting into our focus as we go forward with the race for the third week in September. I think sometime in August that will be that inaugural celebration will also take place. Last year, we also celebrated the birthday of the city of New York in conjunction with the race, and I think that was like the 160th birthday, if I'm correct, with that year. But we're moving forward and very excited about the various activities. It seems like every month we have new projects coming in and looking for support, love, and inspiration through CityWorks.
And you said you've got about approximately 45 organizations underneath that umbrella, correct?
Exactly.
That's pretty good work. That's great work, Preston.
Glenn?
Yes.
You have another caller.
Okay.
Probably with a comment or a question.
Yeah, why don't we hear from them? You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening. This is Lorraine Warren.
Hey,
and
Lorraine.
I saw the name Preston King, so I said, let me call in and say hello. I haven't seen you in about 10 years.
It's been a while. Well, I miss you, too.
And I always remember you were always involved with projects, the community. And I'm glad to hear that you're still doing that. So how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. It's so, so good to hear your voice. I understand you were down in Florida or Atlanta, someplace down south.
I am in Florida. And how's your sister doing?
She's doing wonderful. She was doing wonderful.
Oh, good.
I don't think she made it to the summit last year, but I think the year before she got to the summit, and she was very pleased. I think that may have been Detroit. If it wasn't, oh no, it may have been Miami, was it? I think, but she went to the one in Detroit because that one focused on New Orleans. And she really, really loved it. She hadn't been for about 6 or 7 years. But
well,
she's doing very well with theater.
I just called to say hello and just to wish you many blessings, continued blessings, and to say hello to your sister. And Glenn, you're doing fine.
Thank you. Thank you, my dear.
I will be talking to you.
Okay.
So, Lorraine, do you plan to try to get to London this year?
Excuse me?
Plan to try to get to London, England this year.
Oh, I won't be there. That's not in the plans this year. But
okay.
I may come to, what is it, Baltimore, Maryland?
Maryland next year, correct. Correct.
That's a possibility.
Wonderful.
Very
That's
good.
A possibility.
Excellent.
Okay, peace, y'all. Thank you, Shakesha.
Yeah, I look forward to connecting with you offline so we can talk about what's been happening in the last 10 years.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Okay. You take care, Preston.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, hello.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the International Black Summit, Man of the Month Talk Show Network. We're coming to you live. Our featured guest tonight is Preston King, Jr. out of New York City. We were just talking about CityWorks. We're going to talk a little bit now. We're going to shift the conversation just slightly and talk about some of the other projects and activities that Preston King is up to. He keeps so busy. So, Preston, tell us some of the other events. I know you're working with the youth up in at the church, at the Salem Church, and a couple other churches as well. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing up there.
Yeah. I'm actually it's a good transition, and I actually meant to bring forward the distinction, the concept or relationship of the church to Sugar Ray Robinson, and that's a beautiful coming together of two brothers whose fathers were connected. Of course, Sugar Ray Robinson's father is well known, but his pastor, Sugar Ray Robinson's pastor, happened to have been my uncle, the Reverend Frederick S. A. Cullen, who was the founder of Salem United Methodist Church in 1902. my uncle started Salem with three women and a collection of 19 cents. In 1902.
Wow.
And,
that's great.
Yeah, and then Salem, by the time he retired, he was at Salem for 42 years and retired. Salem was the largest black church in America. And it today has the largest physical space of any church and most buildings in Harlem. So Sugar Ray started boxing as a little kid at Salem Church. They had a group called the Crescent, Salem Crescent Boxing Club. And as a little guy, he would come by and was interested in developing his skills, and eventually became the greatest fighter that there ever was in America. And we say that because he fought more fights than any other fighter, and won more fights, had more knockouts than any other fighter in the history of boxing, including Sonny Liston and Muhammad Ali and Jack Johnson and all of those greats. So I have
Preston, wasn't he the one that initiated a whole a fight a month that Ali did for a short period of time when he was Cassius Clay?
That's a part of history of the boxing world that I'm not familiar with.
I remember watching a show and they would talk about that, and that Sugar Ray basically used to box once a month, so he didn't have to do a long prep because he was in shape from the last month.
That's right. That's true. They have the 150, 170 flights in. Whatever the number was, it was a tremendous number of fights he had. He fought every month. That's right.
but you know, there's another thing that comes to mind as well, and that is that what Harlem was for black folks in New York City at that time, because you had all of your greats. You had your jazz musicians. You had your athletes, and everybody lived in Harlem at that time. You know, like most folks lived in Harlem.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm surprised, but not surprised. So when you tell me about the Salem Church, it makes sense to me, you know, because everybody, you know, my parents, my father particularly was on 121st Street. He stayed with his dad when he came in from the island, and they would routinely see all of the greats, the Dizzy, anybody you just named the names, and they would see them walking around. Joe Louis was walking around; they'd say hello to him. You know, mm-hmm. it was like a little, a little community. You know,
yeah.
And I think that we forget the history of Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harlem has got a very, very rich history. But anyway, go ahead. Tell me a little bit more about some of the projects you're working on.
Yeah. So that you get a little background on the history of Salem and how it evolves. My uncle, who was the founder, adopted a young man who was a brilliant young poet at the age of 8, and he was named when he was adopted. To be Counte Cullen, very famous international poet. And during his time in the 20s and 30s, he was the dominant poet and artist, leading artist in the Harlem Renaissance era. And there is a library named and dedicated to his spirit on 136th Street and Lenox Avenue, of which I'm very happy to be a member of the board there. And so Counte Cullen is a part of the history of Salem as well. So bringing that forward, Sugar Ray and I have now worked through Salem and rekindled some of the spirit of his father, Sugar Ray, and it's just a wonderful coming together. Today I am the president of the United Methodist Men at Salem, United Methodist Church, and something happened about a year and a half, close to 2 years ago. There was an incident where two young men were playing poker or cards, and one gentleman got upset and felt that he had to resolve it in a very powerful way, and brought a gun back and shot the young fella in the head and killed him. And the young fellow got killed was one of the fellows who used to come by Salem to some of our community programs. But that was not just a unique incident. If you pick up the Amsterdam News in the last week or two, you could see that the gang wars and the killings in Harlem, black-on-black crime, has escalated. And so we were moved by a gentleman named Reverend Clay from the across the street, the Williams Institutional African Church, to try to do something. And there was interfaith churches in this community of Harlem. So we had about five or six churches come together for a period of time, and there's still associated, and those churches are Salem United Methodist Church, Shiloh Baptist Church, and then there's, of course, Williams Institutional, Church on Adam Clayton, and also Metropolitan United Methodist Church. And then there was St. Aloysius Catholic Church that was participating with us as well. And so the spirit there is has arisen for a need of interfaith churches to come together and put aside our differences in spiritual philosophies and bring our commonality forward to provide that leadership, mentorship, love, direction, support for young men in Harlem and throughout the city of New York. And I have been, for the time being, placed in a position to help to direct that movement and bring churches and communities and organizations together that will make a difference, we hope, for young men. I've obviously have interest and have some skills in that area in bringing groups together. And so I thought it would be certainly a worthy area that we could focus on. And it's been challenging because it's very different as opposed to working with diverse people who are coming through a landmark and affiliation and friends. We're now working through a lot more structured focus of churches who are a lot more sophisticated and rigorous in their spiritual beliefs and operational beliefs. And so it's a different challenge. And I'm very happy with the kind of support we've received, and very tickled and excited that you, Glenn, have stepped up to join us and bring your tremendous skills in working with the International Black Summit and young people for 10 years, and with all the distinctions that you have through Landmark and through your love of children and your work with children and your business development and skills in business, and just the powerful being that you are, as is reflected by the fact that you created the radio shows weekly here. I'm excited that you've also joined CityWorks and see a benefit for us there to work together. And out of that, we've also kind of joined forces in making a difference for the Black Summit through Landmark Education that we have developed a lot of our original training from. So this has been a powerful coming together, a brother who I've always felt who's been a brother, and now we have an opportunity to really do some work together, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to it, and that's a perfect segue to my next question, which is tell us a little bit about what Landmark has done for you and for your personally and spiritually and business wise.
Yeah, I'll say that I was introduced to Landmark by a gentleman named Curtis Porter, who was professor of Black Studies at the University of Pittsburgh when I was getting a master's degree there in the, I guess it was the late 70s, was it late 70s? But in any event, Curtis was a very proactive brother, and he just happened to mention Landmark as something for about 2 minutes that it had made a difference. So it didn't take me long to just go down and sign up. I didn't have to be enrolled, but I found that Landmark experience has made a profound impact on my life and the community around me. If I could start with my family, even. I have a sister now who has, it took her 13 years to be convinced that the Landmark was relevant. And she was convinced when I was able to bring her son, who was having difficulties with a drug addiction. I was able to bring him into Landmark, and it turned his life around He was out in the street doing all the kind of things that drug addicts do. And he's now head deacon in his church, his house in Queens.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
it's phenomenal.
Great.
Yeah. The head deacon in the church where they have about 30 deacons. Raising four children, which three are now in college, and all four are actually in college. So alone and is enough in and of itself. But you know, my sister, after you know taking 13 years to get clear that this work is relevant, you know, is now is a workhorse at Landmark. She's now a wisdom super leader. She's been a leader in the wisdom curriculum for about 4 years in a row. After doing the ILPs and so forth. She's now enrolled my entire family. I didn't have to do a thing. She just brought the entire family from Philadelphia and other places to get them all enrolled. Personally, when I got into Landmark, there were a few things that I had as agendas. One was a health agenda. I had done some damage to my body by drinking a lot of wine and for fun. I was in college, and so my nervous system was shot, and so I felt that I had a lot of knowledge about macrobiotics and so forth, but there was some psychological leftover stuff there that Landmark really helped me to resolve, and took place in the, really started open up in the advanced course where they do that process to allow you to disappear things that seem to be recurring. So that was really powerful. And so I used to be very shy of speaking in public. People might not know that today because I speak in public so much, but I was really a shattered soul when just the thought of standing up and speaking in front of a few people. Now I do it, and some people say that I'm effective. I don't know what that means, but I know that at Landmark, that's another distinction that comes forward, and that is that it provides an opportunity for one to see oneself in a profound way that one is not capable of seeing otherwise. And that's really a very unique aspect that Landmark brings forward. People who are in churches and many other kinds of organizations. My nephew, who's been through a number of disciplines and lots of people, you know, I'm recommending right now to my pastors, who's one of the more powerful pastors in New York, that he introduced to Landmark, just because the upper echelon, the management people in the church and the pastors can gain so much from this distinction of being able to see themselves profoundly, and out of seeing yourself, then all kinds of things transform. You know, you get to see who you are that makes a difference for people in a way. That alone, you know, seeing that I had the ability to make a difference for just out of who I was being, that was revolutionary. It was profound. The Landmark work just brings forward so many distinctions. In TMLP, I was able to get the ability to use things that I had gotten my master's degree. I'd studied, you know, Harvard case business studies, you know, well over 100 cases when I was getting my master's degree. And I knew how to set up a business structure and analyze, you know, in detail, you know, algorithms and so forth. I knew business. But in the TMLP, I was able to bring forward the real distinctions of creating teams, what it takes to enroll people, you know, what it takes to have people enroll other people and to monitor that.
Which is consistent with you nurturing and supporting groups.
That's right. Exactly.
Hold on one second, Preston.
Sure.
It looks like Lorraine is back on. Let me.
Okay, we'll bring her up.
Go ahead, Lorraine.
So, Preston, when you mentioned about your sister and your nephew, it really brought me present to you as a person who's committed to family, because I had the opportunity to actually, it was a summit share that Preston and his sister had with the family. And so I was there, and I had opportunity to just to hear not only, you know, his nephew's story, but many stories about his family and who they are. And I was just so, I just remember, you know, before you said that, I remember something about being in the presence of your family, and all I could remember was that I felt really good, I felt included, and I felt taken care of. And it just really brought me present to that's who we are as a Black community. And that's that same feeling that people feel when they come to the International Black Summit. And when you said your sister has now led the Wisdom Course for 4 years, and also when you were sharing about what you've gotten out of the Landmark Forum, Landmark isn't a place that people hang out around for that amount of years if they're not really, really committed to service and really, really committed to community. So I just want to acknowledge you for all you've done, you know, inside of your family and the young people in your family, and also what you've done as a person in community, because I feel so often the conversation out there about Black men is all about who they aren't and what they don't do, and I feel like you're a demonstration of someone who I have seen year after year after year continuously speak community and projects and, like, what can we do? That's all I've ever heard you talk about. And the distinction, as I got it from Landmark, is being effective is being able to speak into another's listening in such a way that it inspires them to act. And then you see yourself through those actions that those people, you know, take. And so I think that you consistently practice that. And so I just give hats out to you. And I thank you, Glenn. I mean, I think in this conversation, I finally got this blog show about Man of the Month. The opportunity that it is.
Thank you.
To acknowledge the love. That's all it is love. And so thank you, Preston, you know, for so many years. Of, and I know you're a hard worker. They don't know how hard you work. He is a hard worker. Always got something going on and trying to eat healthy, too. I mean, some of the stuff he was drinking and eating, I'm like, that's green. And, you know, a very committed person. So, I mean, really, thank you and many, many blessings to you. Because I'm sure some life you has touched mine.
And you've touched ours as well many, many ways, and it's good to be back in touch with you.
Yes. So I'm going to get on out of queue and just listen some more. So thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Circassia.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you, Circassia. Yeah, Preston, you know, the thing that really comes to mind is the being effective and really being able to turn your action. Let me just share what it was for me. And it's interesting because I had that same conversation about not being willing to talk in public. You know, I went to school for accounting and computers, and when I first got out into the corporate world, I'd have the solution to a particular data processing problem, and I was horrified at the thought of raising my hand and opening my mouth. And so that was one of the things that I actually took on about myself when I went to the S training. But the other thing that I hadn't taken on that I got out of it was the ability to not to point the finger at being black as a reason why I didn't achieve something. I actually saw for myself the opportunity that there was a set of action that needed to be taken. I hadn't taken those actions, and so if I really wanted to be successful, I needed to take those actions consistent with getting that resolved. And so it had me focus on what was next, what was missing, and what action I needed to be in, rather than I didn't get it because of this, that, or the other. So.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I relate to that for sure.
Now tell me a little bit. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show, Man of the Month. Tonight we're featuring live Mr. Preston King coming to you. And we're actually going to shift the conversation a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about your relationship to the International Black Summit, Preston. So tell us a little bit about how long you've been involved in the summit, at what point you joined the summit, and where are you in the conversation of the International Black Summit?
Yeah, it's perfect. That's just about where I was ready anyway. my first Black Summit was in New Orleans, which I think was like the fifth year. And from my understanding, we're now about the 19th year, 19th or 20th year.
Yeah, we're the 19th year. This is 19th year, yes.
Yeah, so I've been around the summit for about 14 years then. As I say, I started in New Orleans, and I'm pretty sure you were around then, and in fact, you were even in New Orleans. But that was a very powerful summit. I remember there being 400 or 500 people there. It impacted me tremendously. So where I am in terms of landmark is that I support the work tremendously. I continue to bring guests because I know that it's relevant, but I haven't done for about 4 years any courses, seminars at Landmark. What I've done is taken an opportunity to look at the summit from the perspective of not just what can I get out of it and what have I gotten out of it, but being inspired by people like yourself and Rosemary and all the wonderful people who have been associated with and who have really worked so hard to keep the summit alive and make a contribution, set up these trips around the world, and have been so disciplined. I've just been so inspired by all of you it became clear that I needed to take a look at how I can make a contribution to the Black Summit as well. And what I saw was that the participation of black men had diminished over the years. And for me, that was a missing. And so for me, what I'm seeing is that, again and again, the issue of black men being supported and loved and given an opportunity to stand up is a missing out there. And obviously the Black Summit is an opportunity for men, black men and women, of course, to stand up and step forward powerfully. And so I saw that as an opportunity for me to make a difference and a contribution to look at how we can bring the summit in the conversation of black men. And
interesting. Good.
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you, man. that's great. That's actually great, because it you're right. It is an opportunity for our community, and it's certainly an opportunity for our male youth who are being so devastated in our community. It's you're absolutely right. So let's let you and I offline, start looking at what is going to take to make that happen, because I'm with you. I'm absolutely, absolutely with you. I think that that's a missing, and I certainly want to be able to share and have more of the young black brothers participate in this work. Because, the bottom line is the reason why you've been here and I've been here is that we're committed to having this work available in our community. And certainly there's a lot of benefit that could occur. So that's great. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, now, I certainly think that you or I should mention for 30 seconds the fact that we've reached out to Larry Pearson and had a meeting, if there's time.
One of the things, yes, go ahead. Why don't you speak to that since you brought it up? I'll go later, but that's fine.
Yeah, wonderful. So I've been having this conversation at the summit for the last 2, going on 3 years, that I was a stand for having black men participate more powerfully there, and I've been looking at how to actually implement that. And I've had my obstacles, with my own schedules, but I was finally able to make a breakthrough talking to Karen Bahari to reach out to Larry Pearson, who is the only black forum male leader in the world, to my understanding, and certainly an appropriate brother to reach out to. And you and I met with him about 5-6 weeks ago. And I will speak for you and say that we were both impressed with the way he responded, which I expected to be, because that's who he is anyway. And so what we've done is initiate conversations between Landmark Education and the International Black Summit to bring that entire African-American community and people of diverse descents into this back into the summit, and to allow the summit to really experience and feel and move forward with the full power that's available to them and from its community, Landmark and beyond.
Yeah, that's great, because one of the things that I've been, when I met Preston, when we're going to meet with Larry Pearson, one of the things, we met in the introduction to the forum event at Landmark, and I got to tell you, to walk in to a room full of black folks with a black leader at the front was like a deja vu for me. It was like, I thought I'd walked into a summit event, actually. And the thing about it for me was that was one of the things that was a missing for me back in the early 90s when we were exploring the conversation of the International Black Summit. The opportunity that to have someone be black at the front of the room, was an exciting thought. But I'm actually going to diverse for a second. So Preston, let me ask you a couple questions around what would you say are the differences in Landmark and the International Black Summit? Because I don't know that you're unique in that you've been in both camps for a long time, and so you've got a pretty good perspective. And I'd like to hear what your thoughts are about the differences and the similarities.
Well, clearly the Black Summit was created and intended to address and relate to and communicate to and with black people out of the unique aspects of the African-American experience, understanding and resourcing our ancestors in that powerful way. So what the summit brings is an African American and an African and a global experience of blacks together using the distinct technologies of Landmark. And I have that distinct opportunity to carry the messages of Landmark and the summit to a whole community that otherwise would not be able to be reached in that way. And the summit focuses on creating leaders and developing leadership skills, community leadership skills. And the summit, using its unique African heritage and the black slavery experience and the racist experience, is able to relate, able to relate to each other in a way that is not available, per se, in the traditional Landmark format. So therein lies the primary differences between the two. And at the same time, it's like, a man may grow up from his mother and his parents and go out into the world and create a whole new personality and impact, but he can never really forget and cannot be as powerful unless he acknowledges and has a relationship with his parents and can acknowledge the source from which he has come. That's my personal opinion. Some others may not necessarily see it that way, but that's what my motivation has been and what I'm grounded upon.
That's great. No, that's good. That's very good. That's very good. And let me ask you this. So what would you like to see out of the both organizations? You talked a little bit to it before, but I just wanted to kind of tease that out a little bit. So what would you like to see in the relationship with these two organizations?
Okay, so you and I have alluded to a few conversations about this, and that is that anytime you and I have been around Landmark and mentioned the International Black Summit, what we've gotten is that this tremendous love and interest and motivation there to have an experience like that. I mean, it's just like it's amazing what's available for people who have been communicated to that this is available. You and I talked about, trying to enroll people to do the summit who are outside of Landmark versus talking to people to do the International Black Summit who have a Landmark discipline behind them. And it's like giving candy to a baby. So many African-American people at Landmark are interested in doing this. It's unbelievable. And it's a resource that has not really been taken advantage of for the last 10 years by the summit. Conversely, what the InterSummit can provide to Landmark is access to an African-American community that it otherwise would have no way of reaching into. And out of some of my spiritual disciplines, I'm clear that Africa is the spiritual foundation of the next 2,000 years of leading this global movement called Earth spiritually. It's been confirmed to me by a number of forces. Africa is a number two soul, number two ray, spirit, love, and wisdom. And those are the energies that are going to be carrying forward to bring this planet back into harmony and to find its spiritual ascension. And so Africa is important.
I completely get it. It's interesting because I've been saying for probably the last almost 20 years that for some reason I didn't have any particular rhyme or reason to it, but that black people are going to lead us through the next movement, the next changes, the next transformation. And I think that the last conversation in the Declaration of International Black Summit speaks to it, you know, transforming the universe. So I definitely can get that. We've got Lorraine has got her hand back up. Let's go to her. Go ahead, Lorraine.
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Oh, thank you for picking me. I just wanted to say, Preston, I agree with everything you said in reference to the, you know, the, when he asked the question, what are the difference between the summit and the forum? And except for one thing, just to clarify, is that the distinctions of the landmark forum and the distinctions of the summit are different. And, you know, from the beginning, the distinctions that are used in the summit were generated from the people in the room as a body via being engaged in the conversation. And so, you know, that's a difference. So they come out of really the heart of the people of Black African descent who were participating in the room and facilitating and engaging in the conversation. And a lot of those people had done the landmark forum, you know, in the past. That's different now because some of the people who come to the summit haven't necessarily done the forum because the summit has its own prerequisite. But I think to be responsible and just to, for clarity, that the distinctions are separate and not landmark distinctions. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you for clarifying that.
That is important, and it's a good perception, and it's a good communication to bring that forward. I think we all know that.
I just give all acknowledgement, like you said, to the Landmark Forum, because, oh, my goodness, I was a different person before I did it. And I think the forum gave me the clearing and the space to participate in the summit. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you, Lorraine. The other thing that I want to point out is that when I listen to the work that's being done and the work that's being developed, it's interesting because I also hear similarities in terms of even though they've been developed and from a different access point, some of the same work is being done. So that's always a great, you know, I look at it this way. Transformation is transformation is transformation. And in pausing itself, there's opportunities that are available through the technology of that particular transformation. And what we're up to is you know, making an impact in our community economically, spiritually, and physically.
Absolutely.
So, Preston, it's a couple minutes over an hour.
Okay.
I want to honor your time in terms of you being with your family and such. Is there anything that you'd like to share or to say in closing to our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Two things. First of all, thanking and acknowledging Lorraine, I do want to, you know, complete by, you know, focusing on the fact that the large community that you and I have agreed, you know, we've seen that the largest community that's easily accessible to and registering, having enrollment conversations, you know, and actually being able to make a difference and quickly to have people come into the summit has been identified clearly out of our landmark community. It's just so clear. And so it's very obvious that the work that Landmark is doing with all communities is having them be available for the distinctions of an organization like the Summit. It's just so different. And secondly, one of the things that's so unique about the summit that we all love is its uniqueness, you know, as separated from or distinct from Landmark. It is very unique in the fact that it's self-disciplined, as one of my folks from the summit has said. You know, what you do in terms of particularly leadership is all self-motivated. You know, self-generation that actually brings you forward. Nobody's going to crack you on the knuckles, you know, with a hammer. You know, if you don't show up at 9 o'clock, you know, there's not a nobody's going to crack you on the knuckles. And at 9 o'clock on Friday, the summit begins, and it's Afrocentric in that there's music, there's dance, there's a whole African American way of being. That's about celebration, music, food, and dance, and transformation. That's truly a transformational, a loving experience. And so that's why we're here, out of the work of the summit. We're here because it is so unique, and it's so much who we are and who our ancestors were. And who our ancestors would be proud to know that we are carrying forward that heritage in such a melodic, loving, and spiritual way. So I want to thank you for that opportunity to be able to talk with you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that, you know, you talk about the rituals. We were in, I believe it was in South Africa, and for the opening event, we had flowers and candles floating on the pool. And it was, you know, and one of the things for me is that I hadn't had a lot of experience with rituals, but yet there was something comfortable and there was something knowing about it. Later, some of the people did the Maladoma's work and talked about the DNA and the memory and being in touch with yourself in a way that has you include the ancestors. So that, you know, for me, that's always been a very powerful aspect of myself that I get to bump up against as a first generation Caribbean American, but also a Black American, you know, all of those things that I am part of, that's part of me, gets teased out and bumped up, and I get to see who I am. So it you know, it's fun. You know, I enjoy it and I love it, and I ain't going nowhere.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes, indeed. Well, again, thank you so much, Mr. King. Mr. Preston King Jr. Out of New York is doing some fantastic work with Landmark, with the Summit, with CityWorks, with the youth organizations in the community. I'm just going to check in to see if there's anybody else. Is there anyone else that would like to say anything before we close tonight? Just hit one, and I'll give you a chance to just close out this Memorial Weekend of 2008. Thank you for being here tonight, taking the time to listen. And again, for those of you who are in the chat room, or otherwise, this is recorded. You can do podcasts, MP3 copies, or you can listen to it online to the archive. So all of this is available. We do have one person. Hold on a second. 773, go ahead. You're on the air.
That they supported me during my surgery from all over. Sadiq called me from South Africa, and Oren called me from London, and Wambui called me from Nairobi, and of course, you know, New York, California, all the other Summit family folks were nice enough to think about me and call. So I just want to say thanks, and I love you all. I'm sorry I just tuned in because I forgot, but hope to be in on it next time.
All right, Kumba. It's always a pleasure. Speedy recovery for you.
Thank you.
We love you much, and you are always in our prayers and blessings.
Thank you so much, and I love you all.
Good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining.
Oh, okay. Well, have a happy holiday.
Thank you. Thank you. So on that note, peace and blessings. Love you much. Don't forget, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. We've got five shows this month on Sunday night. We have the Sunday night shows are at 8 p.m. We've got On Track the first Sunday. The second Sunday is Let's Celebrate. The third Sunday is Vision Works. And the fourth Sunday is Man of the Month. And next week Sunday, we're going to have a special surprise. So check your emails, and we'll let you know. We've got a special event set up for the Sunday show next week. And then we've got the Wealth Club shows on Tuesday, the second Tuesday and the fourth Tuesday of the month. It's from 6:30 to 8 p.m. We've got two investment opportunities, and we've got three half-an-hour segments. And on that, those two are investments, and the last is an opportunity for people to talk about their businesses, and so we've got some exciting folks for the next show on the 26th. We've got another request.
Hello?
Lorraine, yeah, hold on. Lorraine, go ahead. Lorraine, did you have your hand up? Yeah, go ahead, Lorraine. We've got you on mic now.
I didn't want to be on the air. I just wanted to tell you to call me.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Good night,
man.
Bye. Love you. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us at the Man of the Month International Black Summit Talk Show Network. And again, our guest was Preston King. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a good night.